KOW Philly Soccer Show. I'm KOW's Greg Willandini. This week, me and Mike Cervedio are joined by Matt DeGeorge from the Delaware County Times as we begin to wrap up the Philadelphia Union season. So everybody sit back and listen. So we have kind of a end-of-the-year roundtable, I guess you could call it. We have, as always, Mike Cervedio with us. But Matt DeGeorge from the Delco Times, the hardest-working man of Delaware County, sports, getting it out there.
And we're all drunk already, so let's go.
I was going to say, I thought for the Union, I thought the year ended in mid-August. So I don't know what took us so long to get this podcast.
I just want to say Philly Soccer Page just did some inspired work this week with Peter Andrews.
Oh, that was
basically
good.
Taking earlier columns and running them as a new column because nothing's changed this year. Nothing has changed. We've gone through the whole year, and there's really not that much new to talk about.
No, it sucked the whole time.
And we've kind of been – I mean, you guys have probably been writing the same things. We've had people in here. We've been saying the same things.
Yeah.
Every week.
You know, the only difference is Peter's self-awareness of that. That's pretty much the only distinguishing factor. I feel that all the time. I'll write a story and be like, didn't I write this already? And I've had to look it up a couple times to see if I have.
Didn't I say the exact same thing last week? It's like, you know, looking in a mirror, like two mirrors, and it's just infinity back and forth. That's what it feels like. But mercifully, the season's ending this weekend. You know, another loss on the road against Chicago. And that's, yeah, one thing we can point to, nothing's changed. This team hasn't grown at all. They are bad late in games, giving up points, giving up goals, dropping points, losing games, turning wins into ties into losses.
One of the most amazing things to me looking at the standings today is that there's worse teams on the road than the Union. The Union have one win. New England has made it through the whole year with zero.
Yeah, I mean, that's a league-wide issue.
I think there are 0-11
we've talked about
it, but
yeah, that is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we're often reminded by MLS players that the country is big and it takes a long time to get from one end of it to another,
yes.
So that means you can't win on the road.
So, apparently.
For whatever reason, it seems that that home field advantage manifests itself so much more in MLS than in a lot of countries.
Looking at the standings, too, though, I did notice that the Western Conference teams are better on the road. So I don't know how that factors into this because seemingly they have more travel being more spread out.
Psychologically, maybe they're more used to it. I guess there's not a lot of places that, for instance, you know, I don't think Real Salt Lake can bus anywhere, whereas the Union can bus places. That's my crack psychology.
That's brilliant. That's top work right there.
But one thing that the standings do say, and which I think is going to further complicate the postseason discussions and throw us back into this same morass again, is that if the Union win on Sunday against Orlando City, they have the same record that they did last year. And that's going to be a point that I'm sure Ernie Stewart and the powers that be will not let go overlooked in the postseason.
I'm sure I'm going to get it as a Facebook ad next week, which the Union have just discovered how to use.
But
I keep getting these paid promotions in my feed, and I'm just like,
it kind of feeds into that cycle. And I almost tweeted this during the second half of the Chicago game. But if you were watching that game, you should have almost been rooting against the Union, because if the Union were to somehow have won that game, and obviously they didn't, and then come home and won against Orlando City, that would put them at 45 points ahead of where they were last year. And then everyone can look and say, well, look, everything's fine. We're doing things the right way, because we were better than we were last year, even though we started this terrible and this and, you know, Josh Yarrow's foul against San Jose and Tyrone Mears' goal in the Atlanta game at home and a couple breaks here and there. We're in the playoffs, and that just kind of feeds the cycle of just they're just entombed in that cycle of, well, we're close. We're kind of doing things the right way, but not really.
It's close for everybody, though. I mean, if the Union win, and I think that they have a chance to finish as high as seventh.
Right.
Because I think there's like three or four teams on 41 points. But you look at all these teams, and they can all say the same thing. If we had won two games here, we could be in the playoffs. I think the only team that can't say it is DC United. They would have had to win three in additional
games. And even
games.
They would probably say, well, if we got our guys in a little sooner, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. But you're still below the red line.
Right.
And
seventh place and 11th place, when you don't have your first draft pick, it doesn't make a difference.
That's one of the most egregious things.
That
they haven't, you know, they're having the year they're having, and they do not have a first round pick next year.
It is and it is. I mean, the one thing that I'll point out, someone in Kansas City did point out that in whatever it was, 2015, when they traded for C.J. Sapong, they gave up their first-round pick. And that was kind of – some of us looked like, well, you're going to give up your first-round pick for C.J. Sapong. That first-round pick was Connor Hallisey, and I don't even think Connor Hallisey's still in MLS. So it is hit or miss.
No,
granted, you haven't gotten
totally
much
is.
Out of Chris, out of yeah. Charlie Davies, but you know,
not
it's,
much out of Charlie Davies is the nicest thing.
I'm being nice because Charlie's
done being nice.
Charlie is one of the nicest guys to come to
Philadelphia.
Charlie
a lot.
He's a great guy. He's a wonderful guy.
But
probably great in the locker room.
Less than 25
good
minutes.
Practice.
He
good
started the one
guy.
Game last year. Didn't I think he had one start last year? Maybe.
Well, that's fantastic. Okay. So you throw away that pick either way.
A little bit. Yeah. To a conference rival. Too.
Right. So that's a problem. Okay, you talk about the standings and the record and wins and points. That's fine. But you crack the team open. Your big three out of your 2015 draft, your big three out of that draft either went backwards or sideways due to form or injury or both. That's a problem.
I don't know which one went sideways, but I don't even think anybody went
sideways.
I think
he means Fabian Herbert just because we haven't seen Fabian Herbert since April.
All right, that's fine.
Right,
that's
say Herbert went sideways.
I think he's still fourth in the team in assists.
I mean, careened sideways, but
right.
It
was a 90-degree turn.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a gentle, you know, grade.
You didn't take the three steps back that Keegan Rosenberry and Josh Yarrow took.
Seriously. So there's that. There's your $500,000 striker you got from England that had one goal and can't get on the field.
His first and his goal was in March.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. And he got a collapsed lung for his efforts on that play.
So
that's game.
Not a lot of positive reinforcement for him there.
We get some really awkward Dunkin' Donuts ads though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also had that awkward conversation with Curtin where he's like, "How's Jay? He's spitting up blood." Okay. Not a simple not great week suffice to have.
How's Jay? Well, it's like this. Okay.
He didn't make it.
Your best player is your goalkeeper, which is fine, but there's a great possibility you're going to, you know, sell him. Pretty big possibility that's going to happen.
Sooner rather than later.
Your best rookie is the guy you got on the fourth round, which is fine. Great year. We all love Jack, but, you know, kind of a fourth round guy that nobody was expecting. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative. It's just a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah, we'll go with it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's been nice. I mean, in a year where there's not been a nice story, it's been a nicer story.
It's a nicer story.
Yeah.
You know, CJ is a great story that he hit double digits.
Yeah, he managed to bang in a lot of goals on a terrible side. It's always impressive.
Had a career year. You had a transfer window you let come and go.
Mm-hmm.
Tattoo artist is in.
Huh?
The tattoo artist is in.
Well, we got the tattoo artist. So again, I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, but it's there.
It's not anything.
So you kind of look at, fine, you talk about the record, the points were close to what we were last year. You know, ball bounces here. Ali scores that penalty in with the first or second game.
And Toronto game.
The Toronto game. It's a different result there. All that. That's fine. But you have these big, egregious things that happened during your year that were either preventable or in some cases, self-inflicted.
And the biggest thing that, you know, it's thrown around so much on Twitter of MLS zero, you know, point whatever.
Yeah.
And all, and it's usually facetiously. But to a certain degree, like at what point, if you're a fan of the Philadelphia Union, do you want to be in a position where you go into a season and say, we're a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have the roster to be a playoff team. Not, well, if a couple things go this way, if a couple things go that way, because that's ultimately what last year was.
Right.
You know, if this works, Chicago this year came into the season with all the investment that they made in the offseason, and you looked at them and you're like, okay, as long as Bastian Schweinsteiger plays 15 games, this is a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at NYC's roster for the last 2 years and said, all right, this is absolutely a playoff team. You've never really had the opportunity to do that with the Union. There's always that kind of hemming and hawing. And I think at this point, going into season 9 of this project, you need to have an offseason where you can look at a roster and say, okay, this is, you know, to have someone who's not paid by the club other than Jim Curtin to say this is a playoff caliber roster.
Yeah.
And that's what the mandate has to be.
They
got to
hit it out of the park in this offseason. They just have to.
I was thinking about it the other day, and Jonathan Tannenwald had a really good tweet about what it costs to bring Nemanja Nikolic over, and just bringing him alone with fees and salary, it was about $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do it. They need to do that.
That's the baseline for me this offseason. The Union need to spend $5 million all at once on transfer fees, on salary. You've got probably close to $2 million coming off the books with a moderate offseason of just replacing kind of deals, assuming Moadu doesn't come back, if Chris Pontius is allowed to walk.
Mm-hmm.
Allberg, El Seno decisions will bring you close to $2 million. They need to spend that money now and revamp the roster in a way that, you know, we're almost looking at them as having a window that's closing already. I mean, Alejandro Bedoya is going to be 30.
He's over 30. I think he'd be like 31.
Harris is 32?
Yeah, Harris, yeah. And he'll be like on 33 into the season.
You have a window minus the actual winning of stuff. Like, you have an opportunity where you've created a decent kind of framework, and it's time to go out and spend that money. Get a number 10. Get a really good winger.
I mean, that's the thing for me is that, I mean, you bring up Chicago with Nikolic and Schweinsteiger. The Union have to spend on 9s and 10s.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to spend money on 8s and 6s, which Moadu and Ali Bedoya are, if you have no 9 and 10.
Right.
Well, you can spend TAM or you can spend DP money on those guys once you have a 9 and a 10 that you're paying DP money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you're not doing that, I mean, I'm more than happy to let Alejandro Bedoya go to another team. We can find a decent 8. Somewhere.
Players that make the attacking players around them better. Look at this year what Atlanta's. I know Atlanta's an unsustainable example because Arthur Blank's got more money in his couch cushions than Jay Sugarman has, which is nothing to be ashamed of. But their central midfield. I mean, Jeff Lorenowitz has looked like he's 30 again.
Right.
You know, ageless because you have such dynamic attacking talents ahead
of him. That's
always the thing with Bedoya. He's a great complimentary player, but when you don't have players that complement him, he doesn't look good.
But the whole roster, and I've said this before, the whole roster is B players. Everybody. Even CJ to a point.
Is a
good guy. Would be a better player if he was paired with somebody else.
I never thought CJ, to be honest, I didn't think that CJ could score 14 goals in a season surrounded by this cast.
Right. So, I mean, that's a testament
to nobody that can reliably hit a cross.
Yeah.
That's a testament to him breaking his backside all year. Yeah, it is.
I think it might be foolhardy to expect him to score 14 goals next year.
Right.
Again, I think it would be, if you upgrade the attacking talent around him to maybe get 15 to 18 goals from a combination of Simpson and
I agree.
Sapong, but you have to bring in
players.
No, I don't
agree with that. I don't agree that Jay Simpson can play in this league. I'm
giving Jay Simpson the benefit of the doubt because I think a lot of his problems, and this is probably a whole nother show, a lot of his problems are based on Jim Curtin's team squad rotation.
Hatred of a two-striker set.
Well, no, just hatred of... It's complicated with Jim and how he views that. But
Jay doesn't work in this system.
I think he could work if given some time to settle in. He doesn't seem to work as a sub, which is an acquired skill.
He's absolutely not. He's not a guy that gives the instant offense.
I'm not quite willing to write him off yet. I still think he's probably making too much.
Well, you're going to see him next year unless I can figure out a way to unload that salary.
You are going to see him, yeah.
I mean, he's going to be here next year. And so,
can we just let him go?
You got to eat the salary. Do we have any confidence Union would eat $500,000 or however much he's making?
It would have to be some kind of a mutual parting of ways. Yeah. I don't think that their relationship is at that point. I mean, having seen the Union, having seen numerous player club relations with the Union deteriorate to the point of paying them to go away. Yeah. Jay Simpson's not in that category.
Yeah.
No. As a personality or what he brings on the training field. So
so there's that.
Ghosts of Rice and Bowling.
You gotta bring him up, man.
It's like he's sitting in the corner watching.
Where were we? So yeah.
Debacle.
But you're absolutely right. I mean the money, if you could clear the money that we think they can clear, then they have to go out and get that attacking force. And I think the week you were out, I had Adam on here, Adam Kahn, who's, you know, the brilliant soccer man that he is, made a good and semi-frightening point kind of looking at the defense and said, okay, yeah, get the 9 and 10, but you might have to spend on defense.
I still think you need a veteran center back.
A veteran center back that's probably not Gooch.
I don't necessarily know that they're running the risk of bringing in someone, because you now have three young center backs that mm-hmm. are projected to improve.
Sure.
And you still have Austin Trusty.
Right.
So I think there's a delicate balance there of how they're going to do that. I think probably the more apt solution would be to make one of those redundant assets into something else. I don't know if that's by moving Richie Marquez.
Or Ray Gattis.
I don't think there's a market for Richie Marquez. I wish that there was.
I think there should be. I think he could be a third center back in MLS for the next 5 to 10 years. I think he's that solid.
I think, but that's the problem. I mean, he's his third center back.
Yeah, but if you can get $75,000 in allocation money for LAFC for them to bring in a local guy, then maybe you'd think about it.
I think you should absolutely think if someone's willing to give you $75,000 for Richie Marquez.
Yeah, I mean,
take the check today.
I mean, he's
I like Richie. I know
he's a solid. He's a solid player. You run into the same problem. I think you're now running into the same problem in the defense of that you've had in the midfield this year. Of you have a lot of good players who are maybe like 3/4 of a starting guy or 2/3 of a starting guy in terms of where you want them to be, and you can only put two of them out there at once. So having, you know, you could have 300-400 sort of good center backs, and they don't maybe necessarily equal one stopper.
Right, right.
And I don't know that Jack Elliott is the one stopper, or if you should really expect Jack Elliott, fourth round pick out of West Virginia, to be the stopper.
Right. I think, you know, he's great year, rookie of the year candidate and all that, but you do worry about him progressing. You know, he was a fourth round guy. He wasn't the blue chipper. I mean,
And just especially based on this year where we saw everyone else regress.
I'd be more worried about the fact that he's a member of the Philadelphia Union being the root cause if he's not going to progress later, just because there's a long line of
people
less than success stories.
Right. Yeah. This is a real positive show so far.
I talked about this with Greg a couple weeks ago, and I talked about it with Joe Taney in the box a couple weeks ago. You keep rolling Ahlberg around next year if you're Ernie Stewart?
That's difficult. I was thinking about that today, and I was looking at kind of the numbers. My idea would be to move on directly from both Ahlberg and El Seno.
Yeah?
That would be my move. I would think that, you know, they've done their part. They've had some good moments, but it's so easy to be kind of seduced by the skill that they bring and not look at the fact that between the two of them, they've only gone the full 90 minutes 8 times in 2 years.
Well, I think that's where I stand with Ahlberg. I think if you can have an honest conversation with Roland and you can say, if you're comfortable enough playing 15 to 20 minutes in games that we need a goal, we'd love to have you for next year, because that's his role. He's not fit enough to start. Yeah. He's not involved enough to start games. He gets nothing done as a number 10. But if you need to bring on a second striker type of guy that will bang in a goal when you need one at the end of the game, there's never been a better one for Philadelphia Union than Roland Ahlberg.
No doubting the fact that he can just score goals.
I mean, his goal per 90 rate is up there.
He's got 16 goals in 2 seasons. Yeah, I mean, that's in the top 5 all time of this franchise, which admittedly low bar, right. But still, I mean, that's a lot of goals.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, his goal per 90 numbers are as good as some of the players. And I get what you're saying, Mike. It's frustrating because it's kind of you got to get him when he's in the right mindset. He kind of wants to be out there. There's a lot of baggage with him.
Does he want to be out there the whole time?
It's hard because he wants to be out there, but I don't think he wants to
put the work in to be out there.
The necessary steps to be out there.
Yeah.
And I kind of look at it a little bit as, you know, Ahlberg and El Seno, if you wanted to put it as an either or, you know, Ahlberg's much younger. He makes less money. And El Seno has shown no ability to be a part-time player.
I think he has
in 2 seasons. I looked this up today. In 2 seasons of substitute appearances, El Seno has like 1 assist and 2 shots on goal. He's not that guy to come into a game and affect games.
And I think when you got rid of Madonna and you got El Seno, I think you took a step backwards.
Definitely, when you factor in the adjustment. Yeah,
because I think Madonna gave you, I mean, he was could be as frustrating as El Seno. He was, but he gave you a little more quality on he gave you more quality on set pieces. And I think he just kind of –
he was more direct.
He was a lot more direct. And, you know, if he beat a guy, you had confidence he was going to do something with the ball. Like, Elsino beats a guy, he looks for another guy to beat. Right. Then he looks for another guy to beat. Instead of like, okay, I beat this guy, I'm going to make the pass, I'm going to take a shot, I'm going to try to create something with the ball now.
And Maidana could outsource his ability with his crossing ability.
Right.
He could make the move and then do something with it that was going to benefit someone else.
Right,
Elsino
exactly.
usually makes the move and then slows down again and says, okay, what do I do now? Let me wait for another defender to come in
exactly.
so then I could get by him, and then it just becomes this endless succession of stepovers.
Right, and I think the book's out on him. I think just teams kind of...
Which, if Elsino ever started a podcast, the endless succession of stepovers would be a good be a good podcast title.
Steve,
it would, yeah. Somebody write that down.
Yes. I think with Elsino, I think if you move on from him, that's fine.
I wish he's also older. I mean, he's not going to get much fitter.
This is the guy you got. It's like Ray Gass. This is who he is at this point.
Yeah.
You know, this is Elsino. He's not going to change. He's not going to contort his game to benefit anybody
Personally,
around.
I think keeping either of them around is the cheap way to get out of this.
I'm curious what Alberg thinks about it himself. I haven't talked to him all season because he pretends he doesn't speak English.
His English is very good.
It's perfect.
And he actually is.
And the union let him get away with not talking to the press every week.
He'll talk from time to time when he's amenable to it, which is occasionally.
It's pretty rare.
It's you know, he's not a go-to guy. Certainly someone like Harris is there at his locker every game, any practice.
Yeah.
Whole deal.
I can't say enough good things about Harris.
And it's certainly not something that's unique to, you know, just young guys or just foreign guys, because there's some older guys and some American guys that don't.
No,
like
for
to
sure.
Talk
no,
much.
No. I mean, yeah, yeah. for sure.
But, in this locker room, Gooch never wants to talk. And that's fine.
I wasn't saying Gooch.
I was saying Gooch.
But then when he talks, it's good. So.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's the frustrating thing. I mean, and I get why you don't want to talk to the press, and especially when your team sucks and you lose every week.
That hounding Philadelphia media corps of 7.5 on a good day.
All right, so we laid out a lot of the bad and a lot of the negative so far. There are a few positives came. I think Marcus Epps is a guy you can kind of be excited about. Again, I know, as Matt pointed out, you know,
you always run two goals, right?
Yeah.
Two goals, yeah. He can use his left foot. Yeah.
His decision making, I think, has been.
He's really raw.
I think you've got some redundancy at the winger position with him and Herbers and Pico that I think are good. Those three are going to stick around, whether or not Pontius continues to stick around and he'll be a free agent at the end of the season.
I think Chris, thanks for your time and effort. If no one's gonna
take him, but I think someone would take him, and he'd be a free agent.
He's another California guy. He could go to LA.
Making $400,000.
Yeah,
you'd be looking at a max of, I forget what the CBA is, but the max is what, a 6% raise or 8% raise.
Yeah.
Whatever that would be, you'd be looking at like almost DP money for him. I don't know that I would pay that.
Matt, I don't think so.
Close to 30 for him.
He's done nice. Some nice stuff for us, at least mostly in the first year. I mean, you know, he worked hard this season.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good two-way player, but he, you know.
Consummate MLS player.
They needed him to score goals, and he didn't.
Yeah.
But I think
Epps is one of those bright spots.
Epps is a positive.
I think Fafa is an kind of under the radar, really good signing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a good MLS player.
I think he can be, and you saw flashes of him, his game kind of maturing.
That's why I wish that there was more consistency to it.
Yeah,
it's just that he has those games where he'll try to beat someone and not do it 4 or 5 times, and then you don't see him.
Yeah,
and then you have games where he's just involved. He's winning corner kicks. He's getting around guys. He's firing in good crosses. He can finish. He can shoot.
But I also think that sometimes comes with having a number 10 that he's playing next to, who's able to incorporate his playing style a little bit more. And when Elsino does that, you know it. I've kind of thought of the way that attack is. Remember the old bubble hockey games where everyone's on a stick and can only go on set paths? That's exactly what the union attack kind of is.
I've been saying that for 2 years.
Pico goes straight up and down vertically, and Elsino goes horizontally, and then you got to hope that the puck, you do the little flick thing, and you got to hope that the ball moves into their paths.
Yeah, that's like, totally. I mean,
if you bring in a number 10 that's more uniting in the way that Tranquillo Barnetta is, or the player that they should spend some considerable money for in the offseason, I think that player would unite those disparate styles a little bit better and makes Epps or Herbers. I think Herbers also helps too because Herbers is a little bit more a little more versatile in his ability to either get to the byline or cut in.
Yeah, he'll make and he'll make diagonal runs and he'll do that and he could kind of go inside out, you know, from the middle out. And
I think Pico's another guy that when you put him with more skilled players, he'll play better.
Yeah, I mean it's goes back to the point. A lot of B guys, they need a couple A guys. But yeah, this team's been a donut all year. Just that number 10 spot has been empty, and just the lack of effort to fill it.
Did you guys catch the World Cup qualifiers that Bosnia played, that Harris played in both games?
I did not see it, but I did watch the highlights.
He was terrific.
He scored a goal. I know that.
And he was probably the best passer on the field as usual, but he was wearing the 10 and he was higher up the field. And this is something that I've harped on in this podcast and with Greg all year is with no 10, he's the best passer on the team. Why not let him play the 10? I mean, I know he's traditionally played a little deeper in the field, but who gives a crap?
Yeah, I think
I've never tried it.
It's MLS. You think you could probably figure out how to...
two games where they tried that inverted triangle.
I think that's another pathway that you could maybe go in the offseason is if you want to go out and get a number six who's going to be a, you know, David Guzman, Carlos Grueso type, you know, young DP shutdown, and then invert that triangle with Bedoya and Mandujanin in front of him. You still have to spend big on a winger because you still need someone to kind of enliven that. But I don't think that that's the worst way to go. Again, Jim Curtin's very agnostic about, sometimes is agnostic about formations. Mm-hmm. And I tend to look at it as very agnostic about formations. I don't care if you play an inverted triangle. I don't care which way you turn the triangle. But don't play a system where you don't have someone in one of the most important spots. And that's what they did this year.
No, it's what they did the whole year.
They predicated the entire project around Roland Alberg being out there for 20-some games, being a passer who's going to help, and he's not.
Right.
So if you're—
And he came to camp 25 pounds heavy.
Yeah. So if you're going to—
Or however much he was.
I think it was 16, but it's going up with each successive telling.
It's a fish story.
By the end of next season, he will have been 311 pounds overweight. So, but I don't care what the formation is, but build for it.
Right.
If it's going to be— we need a really good number six who is going to be that ball winner as opposed to Harris, who's not really a ball winner, but is really, you know, a passer and a deep lying regista and all that kind of stuff. That's fine, but get the pieces for whatever design you're trying to execute. And they didn't do that this year.
No, they didn't, and the team suffered. It seemed suffered greatly, and they had such a horrible start.
To me, that's the cheap way out too. I mean, we've gotten all this way. If Curtin doesn't read Harris as a 10, okay, let's get the DP 10 then. We need the DP 10.
I think you need.
I don't want any more DP sixes.
I think at the very least you need to go out and get a high level 10, even if he's not a DP. You need to at least get a TAM type level.
Yes,
someone who's like Elsenio, who's making $500,000. You need to go out and get that one way or the other. Whether that is your number one guy or whether it's just another guy in the rotation, you need to go get him.
I still think I tend to agree a little more with Mike. I mean, the time to do the thing with Harris was this year because you weren't going to go out and get that guy, so you should have done that and flipped the pyramid or moved them into the 10 or whatever, however you want to do it. But you got to kind of drop the cash down now at this point. Now you got to do it now because you put yourself in the spot where you have to do it.
And it's not a 1 year. I mean, there's 1 year expenses to it where, you know, transfer fee is a 1 year expense that you're going to amortize over the length of the contract and all that, you know, stuff. But you need to go out and spend significant money in this year, and then maybe next year you don't have to spend as much because you have the framework in there. And, you know, but it has to be spent.
There has to be that 1 year where they go out and spend the money.
There's no getting, as much as you want to try, there's no getting around the fact that you have to, there's a direct correlation between spending money and success in MLS and in a lot of other areas.
But especially
in MLS.
I mean, seriously, I mean, you look at Toronto, you look at NYCFC, you look at Atlanta. I mean, you look, you know.
And it doesn't have to be to that degree.
No.
It doesn't have to be shelling out $26 million on your front line.
It doesn't have to be that degree, but it has to be more than what they're doing.
Right, but it also can't be, well, we're just going to pay $3 million in salary and it can't be that.
Right.
It can't be that. Radio.com. Radio.
Sports.com.
How worrying is it that when kind of all hope was lost playoff-wise, maybe it wasn't mathematically, but you know, realistically it was, that we didn't see guys like Trusty more, guys like Jones more, guys like Najem more going into the stretch, just to guys like Keegan more playing, seeing Keegan.
It was incredibly stupid. There was no reason not to do that.
I think it's more concerning, not necessarily on Curtin's part, but for what it says, that these guys are maybe not ready. I think that's more concerning. And if that's the case, that undercuts so much of the rhetoric that this is all based on. You know, this undercuts the, our dream is someday to have a starting 11 that's all Philadelphia Union Academy guys. Which is noble.
I hope that never happens.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to come anywhere close to happening. Because
that shouldn't even be.
Look at Dallas. Dallas has the best academy in the nation, and they're still going to go out and buy, you know, the Carlos Carrizos of the world. And they're still going to mess up by
Barcelona,
buying Christian Coleman's.
Barcelona has the best academy in the universe,
right?
And they don't have 11 academy guys.
But again, to be agnostic about it, it doesn't matter if. I mean, it does matter, but it's not the worst thing in the world if your academy doesn't produce these guys. But then don't build a plan around the academy producing these guys.
Right.
Don't lean on that if that's not going to happen. That's where the union, I think, sometimes compound their organizational mistakes of saying one thing, depending on that, and then having that thing, you know, that foundation being washed out from under them. And that's what I think you see. If Adam Najem's not ready for MLS minutes – is that concerning? Not in and of itself, because he's probably a mid-first-round pick. But if you said, yeah, he's the future as the number 10, then, yeah, it's a little concerning.
Right.
You know, if Derek Jones goes from starting in the opener and being in the lineup every day for the first 8 or 9 weeks or whatever it was to being
close
now
to that,
nowhere,
yeah.
That's a little concerning, especially with his concussion history and whether there's something there. You know, Austin Trusty's a 19-year-old kid, so he's entitled to –
yeah.
Probably need a little bit of time. He'll only be a sophomore in college, but maybe it's starting to get a little concerning that those guys aren't in the picture.
I mean, Trusty's on the team. I mean, he's in the union roster
for over a year now.
I mean, to not just give him a look or give him that taste just early on, and just you give him that taste and say, okay, this is what you're working towards. We're going to take a look at you on the big field.
The problem is that the kids in other academies that the union aspire to, they're doing that. You know, even NYC. NYC has very little track record of development. But they had their 17-year-old kid that they brought with them to Colorado, and I guess he's a midfielder, and they threw him out there, and he made his debut at 17, first homegrown to play. Not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no guarantee of success, as Zach Pfeffer and Jimmy McLaughlin will tell you.
I always get frustrated with Jim Curtin when he talks about this, because he's like, oh, you know, we can't just throw out 7 18-year-olds and have it go. Don't do that. That's stupid. No, of course. Throw out one or two of them for 20 minutes in the second half of a game you're losing 3-1.
Yeah.
Who gives a crap about that? The game is already lost. The season is already lost. Let's see Anthony Fontana.
If Roland Allberg is not the answer anymore, I don't need to see him out there against Chicago.
Yeah, you probably already, I mean, Jim Curtin already knows what Elsino's fate is for next year. We haven't needed to see him for 2 months then.
And if Keegan Rosebery's healthy, I don't need to see Ray Gattis right now. I need to see Keegan getting minutes
because
he's the right back of the future. Again, this is what they tell you. He's the right back of the future. He's not getting on the field.
It's not only what they tell us. It's the assumption that they take into their personnel meetings.
Yeah.
It's the assumption they take into how they view the free agent market and the transfer window.
Right.
And
we have X, so we're not going to get X. You know, we're not going to get Y because... You know,
And that determination is fine as long as it's rooted in facts, one way or the other.
You have a master stat Excel sheet that this thing is amazing.
About, it is.
You know amazing things off the top of your head, which is where I'm going with this question. I don't know if you'll know the answer to this one, but let's take into account both right backs and both left backs this season. How many goals and assists do you think it is between the four of them?
Oh, God, not that many.
I mean, do you think it's more than 3 assists?
Well, I know none of them have scored.
No.
Gattis, I think, has a secondary. Keegan has the one on the Pontius goal. Wijnaldum's got at least one. I think Fabinho's got a couple, so maybe five or six.
I mean,
it's not a ton.
I think
Justin Morrow has eight. I was looking this up for my best 11 ballot the other day. Justin Morrow's got eight goals.
Yeah, that's amazing for an outside back position. And that team is just ridiculous.
Well, yeah.
But Keegan Rosenberry, I think, had two goals and three assists by himself last year.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I'm amazed that you're able to roll out Ray Gattis, who doesn't have those statistics in his entire career, I think.
I actually kind of, so I was watching the Chicago game on MLS Live the other day, and they had...
No, it was fine.
Okay. I got the Chicago broadcast.
Oh, there you go.
Reminded you at 15-second intervals how many goals Nemanja Nikolic had. But Frank Klopas in the intro was like, fullbacks, Fabinho and Ray Gattis, they like to get forward. I almost spit out whatever I was drinking. I was like, yeah, that's the stock response when you look at a 4-2-3-1, and you're like, well, yeah, you got to get the fullbacks forward. Fullbacks have never gotten forward in this organization. Fabinho does, because Fabinho's an attacking player.
I mean, much less this year than I think in past years. I mean, I know he's kind of split times with Wijnaldum, but...
He's still dangerous?
Yeah, I agree.
I think, again, it's because, one part sags and the rest has to adjust, and if you don't have a true number six in there, then all of a sudden you don't want to create that space because you don't have that overlapping ball winner.
I mean, I thought we found a really nice place for Ray Gattis last year, which was coming in. I mean, you could do it on the right side, being that Keegan Rosenberry has taken a step back for the future. But last year they used him very selectively at left back in games where they were basically ceding possession, so lots of away games.
Yeah.
I think that's the perfect role for Ray Gattis because he's not going to get forward. He doesn't do it. It's not in his skill set. So you have a guy that'll sit in a little bit more than your right back if you have Keegan out there. And let Ray Gattis be that guy. That's all he can give you.
Yeah. I honestly, as we go into the offseason, I don't feel the need to change anything with the fullbacks right now. Fabinho's out of contract, but if you can bring him back on a one-year deal, he's not that expensive.
Yeah.
Paying, between him and Giuliano Wijnaldum, you'd be paying less than 200, right around 200 grand for your two left backs.
I'm still shocked that Wijnaldum makes as little as he does. A guy coming over from Europe.
I would assume there's some kind of incentive bonus in there with that. Because, he is a young guy.
Yeah, but still, I have
no problem with those two platooning at left back. And I don't think I have a problem with Ray Gattis being the reserve to Rosenberry and his kind of, accountability partner almost to make sure that he's, playing well.
You just got to hope Keegan makes a step up. You got to hope he breaks out of whatever he's in. You got to hope that, Jim Curtin has confidence in him again. I think that's the most important thing.
It's like a tagline for Redupe. Redupe. You just got to hope. You just got to hope.
Okay, so we've been talking around it. Let's talk about the boss.
Bruce Springsteen's
here? Yeah, Bruce.
Let's talk about Bruce Springsteen. That would be awesome. I'm in.
We never got to the Tom Petty deep cut show. Yeah, we should have done that.
Both of those things are more interesting than talking about Jim Curtin.
I was just reading a Ringer piece on Tom Petty's songwriting, so I'm ready for that. Just do not play Wildflowers because I don't need that.
Not a big fan. Where was I going with this? Jim Curtin.
Tom Petty.
Or Tom Petty, same guy.
Jim Curtin, Free Fallin'.
Oh, God. What do we make of the season that Jim had? I'll throw the mic first.
Yeah.
Because Matt looks like you're formulating.
I'm trying to work even the losers
I've gotten more frustrated with Jim through the course of the season because of his inability to experiment and change and diagnose clear problems. I think at the beginning of the season, even through the end of last season and the 8-game losing streak or non-winning streak to start this season, I was willing to let all that stuff go because I was like, Jim's he's trying to play out of this. He's trying to implement his system. He's kind of playing with a group of guys that is not the most talented. But he's done nothing over the course of the season to get more out of the guys. He's done nothing over the course of the season to be flexible with the tactics, which I just think is inexcusable at this point. And his excuses about it have grown old on me. A group of professional athletes can't learn another system is complete crap to me. that and his just complete not wanting to try anything and, else is beyond
and
me.
And this isn't the NFL where you get the phone book you got to learn when you're a player. It's soccer. I mean, it's like basketball. You have a few, you have a framework that you kind of work within. It's not like you're – and to be that rigid and inflexible in a game like soccer where it's all about movement and all about that is eminently frustrating.
I mean, and I love Matt's analogy with the hockey – the guys on sticks, because that's what it feels like watching the MLS. There's no creativity. There's not even an idea in a winger's head that he can make a diagonal run to the other wing. There's not an idea that the center back can make the run forward with the ball every once in a while. There's those ideas have just been avoided out of these guys' heads.
I mean, I look at the Revs, and the Revs, you know, they make a coaching change, they get rid of Jay Heaps, and they still suck. It wasn't Jay Heaps' fault that they were bad, but getting rid of him didn't fix it. So I think when you look at evaluating Jim Curtin, I don't think it's his fault, and I don't think he's necessarily making things all that much better. I don't think he goes anywhere in the offseason because you're going to bring in a guy like Tata Martino or someone of that ilk. You can't. UA can't afford that, and B can't afford what he would ask, and C, any coach that you're going to bring in like that is not coming into a place like the Union saying, you know, welcome, this is your team, change whatever you like, but Gooch is your starting center back, and you gotta play Fabian Harbers at least 25 games.
Right.
No one's going to do that. Also, CJ can't come out of the lineup. The whole place falls down if you take him out of the lineup. You know, you're just not going to do that. So I think Curtin... he's a product of a poor design that they have there, and he's just going
to
stay.
That's the thing, and I think you could point to some things that, the tactical inflexibility, I think you definitely point to that he didn't, he was very, as you say, agnostic, when it comes to the tactics. But, Ernie didn't do him any favors by not bringing anybody in that window. Mm-hmm. And that's... if I'm Jim, I'm really frustrated that I didn't get any reinforcements because by that time they were playing a little better. The playoffs were maybe a reach, but they were at least on the horizon. And
and there was a precedent for this last year with Seattle, where they went out and spent on a 10, made the playoffs, and then won MLS Cup.
Yeah,
and there was a precedent for a team last year having an epic slide at the end of the season. And almost costing them a playoff berth in the Union.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's possible that happens towards the end of the season.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ernie didn't do him any favors by not bringing anybody in.
Jim shows a huge faith in players in saying, play your way out of this.
Only with some players, because he didn't do that with Keegan.
With some players, that's Keegan. True, yeah. I think he let him play. He let him play out a lot of stuff at the end of last year. Because Keegan did not, once August rolled around, he started sliding, and he kept him in the lineup last year.
Okay.
But that doesn't work. That doesn't work necessarily when you don't have the horses to make it work, and they don't.
Yeah.
And they don't.
And Keegan wasn't the only guy that started the year badly. There's a lot of people, a lot of people, including Blake. I mean, Blake had a very mediocre start this season. I mean, he got his head right, and he's Andre Blake, and he played like Andre Blake finally, but. I mean, you're not going to go to anybody else. So you're going to let Andre Blake play out of it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But he let other guys play out of it. Keegan got buried. So, which leads you to think there's more to it.
I think Jim sees a lot more behind the scenes in terms of...
Oh, absolutely. Obviously.
We all know how important practice is to the Philadelphia Union.
Yeah, which, is one of those arguments that as an outsider is kind of tough to wage. And that I don't give a crap on practices like sometimes when I see
what
Ray Gattis's ceiling is in games and I know that he practices well, but I don't.
I always think back. I saw a doubleheader at MetLife one time. It was Chelsea and AC and Valencia and Inter, and just watching when Lampard was still with Chelsea, him practicing like with a trainer by himself, and the rest of the team was, He's Frank Lampard.
Right.
He's going to be Frank Lampard on the field. I'm not saying anybody on this team's like Frank Lampard, but I'm saying you maybe give leeway to some of your guys. You know, Harris Mandoonian probably doesn't practice the same way, you know, Chris Pontius does. You know, Chris Pontius being the American guy probably puts a lot of effort into practice. I'm just assuming I'm in generalities here. But you give leeway, I think, to certain players in practice. And I think a lot of good coaches will see that.
It's always seemed to me that the union put too much faith in it.
Hack did more than Jim.
You look at older guys, you know, guys that were with the organization earlier, Roger Torres, or even guys like Christian Madonna. And, you know, I think Christian Madonna was publicly criticized for the way he eats.
Yeah.
And Roger Torres was
when he eats.
Yeah, what time.
When he eats.
And what he eats and what time. And Roger Torres always seemed like a guy that probably did not practice well, but he was the only guy that you could put on the field and could make that 40-yard pass.
I made the argument with Kleberson until I was blue in the face.
Yeah.
I don't care. I didn't care if Keon Daniel could lift the stadium during practice. I'd rather have Kleberson out there in a creative role because
absolutely,
Kleberson can do it goes more back from to a the, dead yeah. stop.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, because he just had more. Kleberson had more in his toolbox than Keon Daniels would ever have.
And all those names just made me sad.
Especially Roger.
They all make me sad for different reasons, too.
He had a wrench in his toolbox, and it was like an odd non-standard size.
I hear Roger Torres, man, that's a knife in my heart.
When I used to do the—
Twice part of the 24 under 24 by MLSsoccer.com.
When I used to do the weekend tweets as a column for Philly Soccer page, it was after Torres had left. He used to always do Throwback Thursday tweets to him, like, doing things with the union.
Yeah.
And I used to include them every week with just, like, Roger Suarez makes me sad on Twitter.
But they would always be, like, him in practice, right? Because he never played them.
I used to love – I used to call it At Home with the Mondragons because it would always be Carlos and Roger at Fareed's house, like, eating dinner and hanging out and watching TV. And so it would always be pictures of three of those guys hanging out. So wrap it up soon. So there's other stuff out in the soccer world we could talk about. U17s talking about John Hackworth, the revenge of John Hackworth. Well, I mean, he's got Timmy Ware out there.
He's got some good players. Yeah, that helps.
That was a nice 5-0 win, and that the goal in the top corner. Yeah, that was weird.
Tim Ware. So, yeah.
Man. Woof.
Yeah.
I saw even Hackworth tweeted himself today that he was proud of the 5 goals, but then he tweeted it was a sped up version of the last 3 minutes of the game of the USA just keeping the ball.
Yeah,
and I was like, yeah, this is nice to watch, and it's just so nice to have a USA soccer story that's positive.
Yeah,
after the last 2 weeks,
you got to think there's hope. You got
to
think.
What could you be referring?
we've done that over 2 weeks. I can't revisit that. But yeah, you got there's hope for the future, and you got a kid like Timmy Ware out there that can Timmy Ware. Weird. Say that weird.
Weird.
Yeah, right. Out there that can, you know, he obviously has the pedigree, and he's playing with at PSG, and you know, he could be.
Let's get these guys involved in the full setup because the guys in the full setup are not working.
He's a guy that could, you know, if he projects, he's a guy that could grow up with Christian Pulisic. You know,
he looks the part too. I mean, he looks like a fully grown man.
Yeah,
I would get to the
big
point
strong
of,
lad.
You know, in the aftermath of. The tragedy in Trinidad, I kind of made a list of like guys that I don't really need to see again in a U.S. jersey, and it's about a dozen.
Minimum.
Yeah. I'll be honest to say, Alejandro Bedoya is kind of close to that list.
I
like him as a good soldier and as a veteran.
I kind of think whoever is kind of the permanent guy that comes in to coach, I would think Ali's a bubble guy with the national team, just more of his age. And
I mean, there's other guys, you know, guys like Graham Zuzi.
Yeah,
I don't think I need to see
I never have to see Tim Ream in a national team jersey.
I don't even necessarily know that I want to see a lot of Matt Beisler anymore.
His club form's not spectacular.
I'd rather have Matt Miazga get those reps.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, you got to – the only upside is, you know, firing happening. Well, this whole thing happening now is that, you know, come January you start a brand new cycle, so you're not bound to guys that were already kind of in the dance with it, you know, which Bruce was. Bruce Wayne was. I'm not excusing what happened, and
get your kids in. Tyler Adams in. Get Kenny Saif in more. Yeah. Get those guys in, and just make Paul Areola your permanent guy over Nagby, because I'm over the Nagby train. All that kind of, get those guys in and let them work. Let Bobby Wood work with some young strikers. Do that for a while.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Wood's a guy that's definitely going to be there. Obviously, Pulisic.
DeMarcus Beasley.
He's staying or going?
He's staying.
He's staying forever.
He's a Yarmir Yager of the national team.
Beasley will be at all of our funerals. He will hit one hell of a cross that night. He's just going to keep going.
Oh, God. So anyway, so there's that. There's the news about the Columbus Crew, and I tweeted this with our good friend Sean Doyle from Reading FC, or Reading United, who talking about how it's terrible for the Crew, and it is. And I said, well, MLS wants to be a big-time league. Big-time leagues get held hostage by owners. This is what, cities get held hostage by owners. This is what's happening. And it you just look at it, and it reminds me a lot of the Sonics. Like, new owner comes in, no real local ties, real vague about the future, and then one day says, we got to move because, this stadium sucks, and this sucks, and that sucks, so we're leaving. It's like...
Two really good points that were brought up in the aftermath of that. One was Jonathan Tanwald comparing the broadcast markets, which would actually be a step down.
Yeah, 26 to 29.
Yeah.
And thanks for doing that research, John.
And,
John's the TV expert.
He is. It wasn't research. He knew it.
Yeah.
And I think Charlie Bone pointed out that if you're the Columbus Crew, one of your big arguments is, well, we're in Columbus. We're constantly overshadowed by Ohio State. We got to go somewhere else. And you pick Austin.
Right.
Where, the University of Texas.
Is it a big thing? A
couple fans there.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing. I'm not a big college football fan, but it's a thing, I think.
And I would argue that's more intimidating because instead of a big stuffed Buckeye, you've got an actual angry Longhorn. That creates all kinds of logistical challenges.
And I don't even know if there's an argument anymore because there's a lot of transient cities, but Austin's kind of becoming that transient city because there's a tech boom there, and so a lot of new people are moving in. So, but you make that argument about those cities. I don't even know if that just the way people move around these. I don't know if you can make that argument.
Similarities
anymore.
Probably to, I guess Atlanta a little bit. Yeah. And certainly the similarities to Seattle.
Yeah.
And Portland.
So I don't know if that's an argument anymore, but no, and you feel bad. I mean, you feel bad for the fans.
If that's the argument that we're going to use, then someone get Pittsburgh a team.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. This is a legacy MLS team. That's the first soccer specific stadium. They've won a cup. They've had some real good players come through there. And then Columbus has hosted some great national team games.
One of only two clubs that can count both Brian Carroll and Connor Casey as former players. I mean, history like there that does I not mean, grow on trees.
Yeah, I mean, you should write
the He doesn't have a list of jokes, by the way, if you're listening to this at home. He does not have a piece of paper in front of him. This is just Matt the George off the top of his head.
I do have a note that says, get Connor Casey in here. So we got that.
Oh, man. So you just feel bad.
I feel bad for the Crew fans just because of the way it's gone about.
On the eve of playoffs,
they just finished their season ticket drive themselves.
Yeah, you've got some good young.
I would feel crappy if I was a
Crew fan.
I mean, look at
what they've had in the last few months. They bring in Pedro Santos, who I think is a really good signing for them. Pipa Higuain says, "I'm not coming back next year." Then changes course and says, "Okay, I'll play one more year."
Right.
Ola Kamara is a way underrated striker who is excellent. Justin Miram is having a career season. They're bringing up some really good young players in Zach Steffen and Alex Crenali. They've got some really right. – Will Trapp is the darling of probably a now bygone U.S. – American administration on USA Soccer. They've got some really exciting things, and they're about to go in the playoffs. And, by the way, you're leaving. And they're just 2 years removed from hosting MLS Cup. I mean, it's just – it seems like – it kind of sends the message to a small market team, like, even if you do things
kind of right,
nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah, and it's kind of what's been percolating in the NFL now, and then now it just trickles down to MLS. That mercenary owner.
Yeah,
it feels like, there's people. I mean, you know, NFL owners are not spectacular people, but Art Blank, he's a guy that gets it. Art Blank gets it with the Falcons and gets it with, you know, United now. I mean, he's invested in the community. He wants to see these teams grow in the community.
Right.
And by
no means is it to say that the city of Columbus should bend over backwards and give the crew anything that they want, because, you know, that kind of welfare for millionaires is very detrimental.
I think all of
the economic benefits are completely illusory.
You point to what St. Louis did, who did a lot of things to keep the Rams, and the Rams left anyway.
Yeah.
I mean,
you can point to North Jersey still paying off the old Meadowlands for the next 10 years, and that's already been a pile of rubble for the last five.
Right, exactly.
So, or you could point to the lack of economic development in a certain suburb of Philadelphia that has an MLS franchise.
Full circle. Other thing, because you guys are a lot smarter than me, you probably were following it a little closer. This USL thing, I kind of vaguely was following it last night on Twitter. It didn't really stick to my brain. And I wake up this morning to see all this stuff about Bethlehem Steel. And so somebody can explain that to me real quick, or our listeners.
I also don't have my decoder ring for the Philadelphia Union's tweet or comment about Bethlehem Steel. That was
soccer
the stupidest
wars
thing I've read today.
Yeah. With a Z. I guess so. Brian Strauss had a couple of tweets last night. Brian Strauss of Sports Illustrated alluding to rumors.
Brian Strauss, a respected soccer journalist, like throwing out the rumors
from
the bottom
of
the pile, which I didn't think I wasn't really that fond of.
If Brian Strauss was throwing out the rumors, he generally has some good info behind them. But throwing out that several USL, I think a couple of USL teams were going to apply to NASL, and a couple of the two franchise teams run by MLS were going to shut down. I saw that Orlando City B has strenuously objected to that report that they were one of the teams that were leaving. Strauss had mentioned the possibility of the Steel being shut down and being instead the Union approaching a partnership with Rochester.
Yeah, which seems completely out of the blue.
I mean, it's certainly geographically doesn't make the most sense.
I guess there was a bad divorce with Harrisburg, so I can't imagine them going back.
Well, there's some precedent. I think it was Montreal shut down their two team last year, despite having a lot of prospects. The teams don't make money.
No.
You know, I spoke to the CEO of Bethlehem last year and reported that they didn't turn a profit in their first year. It's an investment that you sink money into,
right.
And 3,000 people at Goodman Stadium for 17 home dates is not going to recoup that money. So it becomes a matter of what are you able to spend? What do you want to spend on?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of ancillary benefits, I think, of the Union wanting to cultivate a Union fan base through the Steel.
Yeah.
But having that distance and all that kind of stuff, it's expensive.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that kind of progresses as the offseason moves on.
Do you think that there's ever a chance to move to something like the way that the English Premier League does it, where you have like essentially a U21 or a U23 league with just the guys that are on your team?
I think it's possible, but the first time MLS tried to do that, it was so shambolically done that it was not worth revisiting.
Yeah.
I mean, to hear Jim Curtin talk about it, it was like you played on a Saturday night in a town, and then the reserve league teams on the Sunday morning at a public park would basically go play for 90 minutes. You know, it would be something ridiculous like that. I think that's possible eventually. And if you look at the way, you know, Red Bulls 2 and TFC 2 and Montreal 2 or FC Montreal, whatever it was called, that's how they kind of operated their teams.
Yeah.
You know, you'd play after the Red Bulls game was over, then Red Bulls 2 would play in front of 200 people that were mostly parents and family friends. So it becomes an issue of whether you want to generate money off of it, what kind of opportunities are there for certain guys. I think right now I like the way the USL structure is, because you have guys like Corey Burke and Sekou Kana who wouldn't be eligible for a U21 or U23 team, but who still might have upside.
Mm-hmm.
Until we as a country fix some of those problems of identifying those talented kids from non-mainstream soccer academies, from non-developmental academies early, I think that's still kind of an important net to extend and to catch out there.
Yeah, I mean, you hope it's again, it's an ideal world. Oh, it's a good system, and it will keep going. But in the real world, like you said, you got to pay bills. You got to turn the lights on. You got to mow the grass. You got to, get food for the concession stand. You got to do all these things. And at some point, if it's not sustainable, it's just not sustainable. And they have to find a system that is. So we'll see. It's interesting. It just all kind of I just wasn't processing. I know it was just and it all just came so out of. Well, I guess what you were saying maybe it wasn't out of the blue because these kind of systemic things were happening. Man,
it was kind of a weird timing of it. And I think to wrap that up, it comes down to what's more important, the business side of it or
the player development. Yeah, and
getting guys minutes or getting, Swope Park Rangers.
Right.
That was one of the ones that apparently was rumored to be shutting down, which would be a shame because that's kind of a cool brand, much like Steel. It's kind of a cool brand that they resurrected and all that kind of stuff. But, what's more important? Getting people in there and exposing them to the soccer culture or getting the kids minutes? And it's about getting the kids minutes and create a reserve league. Do it that way.
There could be another way to do it. Yeah. All right. So we'll wrap it up. We talked for a long time. So we'll wrap it up. I think we hit everything we wanted. Yes?
Yeah. No, I'm good.
I got that you were raising your hand.
No, sorry. I was just throwing my hands up and
disgust.
In surrender.
Yeah. So I think we're going to wrap it up. This Union finish out this season on
mercifully
against Orlando at home on Sunday.
You think they'll have, 7,000?
If they get 10, they will have sold 12 or 13.
Yeah.
At least.
I don't know.
That's the thing.
If I'm a Union fan, I would not be there.
No Eagles on Sunday.
That's the thing we didn't talk about. People have been voting with their feet this year.
Yeah.
The stadium has been.
I don't think it's as reflected in the tickets sold because some of that's advanced.
Yeah.
Right. But
I mean, the atmosphere has been stale all year.
I mean,
the Sons of Ben have hardly showed up.
Yeah, I mean, you think there's like a handful of games you think where the crowd seemed really up for it into it.
Yeah. And without dipping too deep into the, the psychosis of some of my mentions after a game. It's a little difficult to, if you look at this team.
I'm not blaming anybody.
No.
But if you look at this team, I mean, how do you, what defense is there for?
I don't blame.
Why
would I don't blame a single fan for not going to the game.
If you have a really good time with your friends in the parking lot beforehand, that's the only thing.
I think it's a great game day experience. But if you're extremely emotionally invested in the Union as a team, they haven't shown a terrible amount of reasons for you to
blame anybody. Usually last year, because they had such a great start and the attendance wasn't great, and I came on here, I go, why aren't people coming? I mean, it's people, this looks like a playoff team, they're playing really well. It was like midseason, but before like kind of the real swoon kind of set in. But but this year I could tell you why people aren't coming. Yeah. I mean, it's out there to see. So let's wrap it up on that. So with the Union going, just want to make this quick programming. Our Union going, we are going to amp up our coverage because we are a partner of this, of the Unity Cup. With a lot of some interesting things coming up. We'll be here on the podcast talking about that. And there's stuff on KYW News Radio and on KYWNewsRadio.com about the Unity Cup. So all that, if you're interested, it's been a great tournament so far. And KYW News Radio will be airing the final on the 11th, and November 11th, that is. So we will catch everybody next week.